5th case, Sanchez versus Holder. Mr. Schaller.
May it please the court, William Schaller for Freddie Sanchez. How does one prove a cancellation proceeding, and what is the proper procedure for determining whether a crime involves moral turpitude? These are actually distinct questions which the Board of Immigration Appeals erroneously conflated. As to the first question, procedure, the proper procedure, we believe, is set forth in the Supreme Court's decision in Moncrief and the many decisions of this court, which is to engage first in a categorical inquiry, a question of law, and second, in a modified categorical inquiry, also a question of law, albeit on a slightly broader, judicially noticeable record. Judge Flom commented in response to the last oral argument about judicial notice, and rightly so. How would one ever fail their burden of proof as three trial judges on a question of law? That would be like saying that the district court granted a Rule 12b-6 motion and this court would affirm for failure to meet your burden of proof. I've never read such a decision by this court, and I never will, because the one question is a proof question, and one is a law question. They do not mix that way. Therefore, the BIA's opinion on its face is erroneous and entitled to no respect. What the immigration judge did do here is decide this question as a question of law. It found that the Indiana accident reporting statute was categorically a crime involving moral turpitude. That cannot be true.
Can I just interrupt for just a moment? But you didn't challenge the removal, which would have been the burden being on the other side. Here, you're challenging the eligibility for cancellation. And so that is a different burden. And so then you have that obligation, right?
I agree, Judge Kendall, that it is a different burden. I'm not quite sure it works in the way that the BIA is suggesting. May I explain?
Sure. I was just confused with your 12b-6 analogy, which is why I asked the question.
I offer it because I think that there is a way to fail under one's burden of proof at this kind of proceeding. You could fail to tender the record of conviction documents under a modified proceeding. For example, the immigration judge says, Mr. Schaller, I'd like to see the plea colloquy. Well, I forgot to bring it today.
I see.
That's a bad idea. I would fail my burden of proof.
Okay.
That's not what happened here. There's no finding like that at all. And if I might go slightly further, Judge Kendall, to kind of jump to the end, because it's implicit in your question, I don't believe any court of appeals in the country has held that whereas here, a non-citizen such as Mr. Sanchez has sought to tender an affidavit explaining an inconclusive conviction. No court of appeals has turned that person away and said, too bad, you've lost under the presumption. The cases that have invoked the presumption, which you rightly raised, Judge Kendall, have done so where the non-citizen failed to tender any proof and the record remained in equipoise. That is not this record. In fact, in anticipation of that question, as it occurred to me in reading these cases, we did ask for and receive permission from this court last Thursday to file Mr. Sanchez's affidavit, really as an offer of proof. And for three trial judges, I think that, of course, makes perfect sense, given all of your experience. If there's a third step here, we want to put on that proof. We did not get that chance, and no case says that we cannot have that chance. I believe, in other words, what is happening here is that the interpretation of this rule, this 8 CFR 1248D, is being turned on its head since the cases proceed from a rule of lenity, a rule of lenience attitude, and it's now becoming a rule of severity. That's not the purpose of this rule, and that's not what these cases teach, and no case has allowed that result, and we're going to urge this court not to permit it here in view of Mr. Sanchez's affidavit. I'm sorry, Judge Roldner.
What was the context for his testimony before the immigration judge that he was unaware that he had hit anyone? Was it a part of the underlying criminal record, or was that in response to a question by the immigration judge?
I believe it was, to answer your question both ways, Judge Rovner, I do not believe that the affidavit that we are speaking of was tendered in the underlying criminal proceedings back in Indiana. It was, however, tendered here because the parties were proceeding under the Silva-Trevino methodology, which the Attorney General himself has said has three steps: categorical, and if not categorical, modified categorical. And if you can't still decide what to make of it, then you go to actual evidence. This court, of course, has approved that approach, anticipating it really in the Ali Mukasey case, and then approving it for now in the Marin Rodriguez case.
You know what I've been wondering? I've been wondering how you think remanding for the BIA to be more specific, or even, I guess I should say, explicit, about the Silva Trevino steps would help Mr. Sanchez.
There are two ways to look at this, Your Honor. First, if Silva Trevino is the law, then we would like clarity as to what meets or does not meet steps 1, 2, and 3 of Silva Trevino. It has not really addressed whether this is, in fact, a crime involving moral turpitude. It has instead spoken the negative, that we haven't proved that it's not a crime of moral turpitude, a separate sentence even using a triple negative. That, I do not believe, is an appropriate judicial review on the part of the BIA as an appellate body. It should first state, well, it is or isn't a crime involving moral turpitude, and which part is a crime involving moral turpitude, and then say that we forgot to tender the plea record, or then proceed to evidence under Silva Trevino. So it seems to me if the agency wishes to have Silva Trevino as its methodology, then we should get, at a minimum, an evidentiary hearing under Step 3. The point we were trying to make, however, is that the way the law seems to have evolved, admittedly, primarily in removal cases, in which the government has the burden, but primarily in those cases, the United States Supreme Court has taught, or at least I think tried to teach, as has this court, that we look at ambiguous convictions and choose the least culpable conduct. And the least culpable conduct in this case is negligence, as we have pointed out in our opening brief and in our reply brief. Under the Indiana pattern jury instructions and under the Machinsky case of the Indiana Supreme Court in 1986, we should have known is enough of a basis to convict Mr. Sanchez. So the least culpable conduct, which is what I believe the Supreme Court is teaching us to view when taking a categorical or modified categorical approach, is negligence. We do not believe that could ever be evil intent, vileness, etc., the moral depravity that the government seems to suggest occurred here. And so I try and answer your question, Judge Rovner, and I hope that they were saying, ironically, we could win as a question of law, but we couldn't lose as a question of law. That's the point I'm trying to make, and I believe that's the right way to understand the cases. I'm sorry, Judge Kendall.
No, excuse me. I don't know how you go around this court's opinion in Cruz Mollajo, which is the 2012 case, talking about it being your burden to show that your client's eligible for relief from removal because you didn't challenge removal. So it's a different standard if you challenge removal versus whether you are seeking to cancel, whether he's eligible for cancellation. And that's the burden that was set forth. And then it becomes your burden to bring forth whatever evidence. That's the first question. The second question is, but the judge did, or the BIA did say, it's not a categorical problem here. This is one where we're going to go directly to the record and found that in the record there was bodily injury, right?
Well, let me deconstruct that for a moment.
Okay.
Yes, there is bodily injury, but that bodily injury could depend on negligence as well as intent or recklessness. And so the least culpable conduct on this record is negligence. So the first point is that saying there's bodily injury doesn't really advance the inquiry, since even bodily injury could be based upon criminal negligence, should have known, as the Machinsky court puts it, and as the instructions put it. On the question, I agree with you, of course, that I do have the burden of proof in an eligibility case,
okay,
a cancellation case.
Cancellation.
I agree with the court's comment, and Marin Rodriguez makes the same point as well. The question is, how does one prove that under Silva Trevino? Silva Trevino, I think, is quite clear by the Attorney General. If it is inconclusive at step two, then I would default to step three and take evidence such as, for example, Mr. Sanchez's affidavit or whatever else the immigration judge thought was necessary. I therefore believe this court's precedents, as well as the Attorney General's own opinion, actually preclude any possibility of a non-citizen losing at step two, at least where the record is unclear and the non-citizen tries to give the underlying proof as here, but doesn't get the opportunity to do that.
Okay. Didn't he plead, though, to the knowingly, intentionally failing to stop? Isn't that what the record is? So you said it could be that there's bodily injury and it could be negligent, but the plea, underlying plea, was to a felony, even though it oddly was cataloged as a misdemeanor. And that requires knowingly, right?
But knowingly should have known. That's the way the Indiana pattern instruction works and Baczynski works. So knowingly doesn't really tell us anything. It itself is ambiguous, is the point.
Okay.
And that's why we cited Baczynski, and that's why we cited the Indiana pattern jury instructions. Have I answered your question, Judge Kendall?
Yes, thank you.
I think it looks like I've used up my time, Judge.
You haven't, Shaler, but I'll give you a couple minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, sir.
Ms. Khoury?
May it please the Court, Jennifer Khoury on behalf of Respondent Attorney General Eric Holder. The only issue before this Court is whether the agency properly found that Sanchez failed to carry his burden to establish eligibility for cancellation of removal because he failed to demonstrate by preponderance of the evidence that his conviction for failure to stop after an accident resulting in injury was not a CIMT.
You know, in your brief, you claim that the BIA properly determined that his conviction was a crime involving moral turpitude. Where do you see the BIA actually making that determination in its opinion? Go ahead.
Okay. I think it may have been poorly worded, honestly, but I do think it's distinction without difference. I think that it's a burden of proof question, and whether the BIA found a crime involving moral turpitude went so far as to find that, or just found that he hadn't proved that he was not convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude. The same, it's the end, same result.
Let me just quote exactly what the BIA actually said. It said that Sanchez, quote, has not established that he was not convicted under a portion of the statute that does not qualify as a CIMT, end quote. If the BIA meant to say Sanchez was convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude, it would have needed to say that he did not establish that he was convicted under a portion of the statute that does not qualify as a crime involving moral turpitude. And I'm wondering how you propose we handle the BIA's error and its failure to actually determine as a legal matter whether his conviction was for a crime of moral turpitude.
I would argue that there is no error in them not coming to an actual finding as to whether there was a CIMT. It didn't have to come to that finding because the burden was on petitioner to show that he was not convicted of a CIMT. So what the board did was respond to his argument that this was not a categorical statute, and that he was convicted under a portion of the statute that did not qualify as a CIMT.
Do you think there's any meaningful difference between having the burden of proving eligibility for cancellation of removal and having to prove that a conviction is not a crime of moral turpitude? Because the latter inquiry is a legal one for the court to make, is it not?
Can you repeat that one more? So what's the first inquiry into?
You know, I'm just wondering if there's any meaningful difference between having the burden of proving eligibility for cancellation removal and having to prove that a conviction is not a crime involving moral turpitude, in your view?
Well, the regulation itself says, not only says the burden of establishing eligibility is on the alien, but also it purposely goes on to say that if the evidence indicates that that a ground for mandatory denial of the relief may apply, the alien should have the burden of proving by a preponderance of the evidence such grounds do not apply. So it specifically addresses both of those things, the general eligibility for cancellation of removal and the fact that when it looks like there's a barring ground or disqualifying conviction, then they have to show by a preponderance of the evidence that it's not.
See, the scienter element of a crime involving moral turpitude is usually understood as specific intent, deliberateness, willfulness, recklessness. Do knowingly or intentionally rise to the same level of scienter as willfully or deliberately?
Yes, it does here. And I would say that...
How? Just here? Or always?
Oh, always.
Always.
Always, yes. Hmm. I also just, quickly wanted to say that, in these cases, although it looks... The statute says knowing or intentionally. You could never prosecute under this statute if you actually ask for actual knowledge. Because if a defendant is denying actual knowledge, you could never prove it. So you would have to be looking at the circumstances surrounding. So the knowledge requirement has to have this language that they were talking about, having reasonable that the driver should have known. Every single case that involves knowledge in these Indiana courts, in these hit and run cases or failure to stop cases, has said over and over again that knowledge is a requirement. So he did plead to knowing and intentionally failing to stop.
Now, does it make any difference, do you think, to the moral turpitude analysis that the court in Sanchez's case entered judgment as a misdemeanor?
No, it does not affect the conduct that he pled to. That's just something that the Indiana courts have, that they can enter in their discretion something as a misdemeanor or a felony. He pled to a felony. And it doesn't change the elements of the crime that he pled to, which is what we're looking at in this case.
I'm trying to figure out, if you plead to a felony, how it gets to be a misdemeanor.
I honestly, there's nothing in the record that gives us a strong basis for that. And I think that IJ said something to that, saying that he didn't know how it got to a misdemeanor, but it was entered as a misdemeanor.
But something must have happened there that made that judge believe that it wasn't a felony.
Then we're looking towards the facts. We can't look towards the facts, and we can't look at the underlying facts of this conviction. This is the, and I don't know, honestly, I don't know whether it's just that he seemed to particularly sympathetic person, but the elements are the elements, and that's what he pled to, and that's the conduct that he pled to. And so I would just say that this court should follow what the Fourth, the Tenth, and the Ninth Circuit have found, that under this burden, an inconclusive record, and I don't even think that it's inconclusive in this case, but an inconclusive record, the alien fails under a conclusive record and fails to show, they have to show that they have not been convicted of a CIMT, and it's far from showing that in this case. Does the court have any further questions?
Sure. Lana?
I have a lot of them, but, but go home, everyone. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Corey. Mr. Schaller, as I said, your time would expire, but you may have 2 minutes.
I thank the court for its courtesy in extending me the 2 minutes. Of course, I agree with you, Judge Rovner, that a misdemeanor was a discretionary decision by the trial court in Indiana. If he thought this was a hideous crime, I imagine he would have given Mr. Sanchez something more than 2 days, including 1 day time served. That is a fact of record that is about as far from intent and evil as I could think.
Wasn't the sentence...
Suspended.
365 days?
Suspended 2 days, time served. 1 day in prison.
And a year probation.
A year probation, that's right. But I think that is at some odds with the notion this was the sort of crime of evil, rape, prostitution, murder, fraud, that accompanies the typical CMIT inquiry by these courts. There is a suggestion by government counsel on the burden of proof, and I wanted to comment to follow up on that and to follow up earlier on Judge Kendall's point. The government has adopted Silva Trevino. That's its position in this case. That's the procedure we followed. Silva Trevino was an eligibility case, as you are correctly focusing on, Judge Kendall. Silva Trevino says go to step three if it's inconclusive. It doesn't say we just stop. So if the government's interpretation of its own regulation, Silva Trevino, says go to a step three, then at least step three is what we should have received. Thank the court, and we ask that the court vacate the BIA's decision and remand with instructions unless the court determines as a matter of law on this record that this was not a crime involving moral turpitude.
Thank you, Ms. Schaller. Thanks to all counsel. Case is taken under